Chapter 35, Do Dinosaurs Still Live Today?
Ah, an island tropical paradise.
Man, if you're going to take a vacation, surely this is the place. Palm trees dot the landscape, sandy white beaches are all over the place, and the scents of fresh pineapple and coconut fill the air.
It may be a bit touristy, but it's well worth the cost. The hotels made sure to go out of their way to not only give you the best accommodations, but even the best location.
The ocean right out in front of you and a long-since dormant mountain right behind you.
Or is it? At first it sounded like a small rumbling. Like maybe a train approaching or a subway passing underneath your feet. But there were no trains, let alone subways, on this island.
But before you could finish your train of thought, the faint rumbling turned into a loud groaning and then into an earth-shattering explosion behind you.
You turn around to not only see that the so-called dormant mountain was dormant no more. In fact, the whole top of the mountain was itself no more.
It was blown off high into the sky along with a mountainous cloud of ash and debris that seemed to rise and continue to rise for miles on end. You simply stare in utter shock and disbelief but are jolted back into reality as huge chunks of debris crash into the ground right next to you. One was a mound of rock and earth the size of a car, others were smaller but big enough to smash the cars.
And smash they did, just like bugs on a windshield. You run for cover to the nearest building but you notice that even the buildings were being pummeled into oblivion. Where to run? Where to hide? As you were left with that horrible conclusion, another dilemma came rolling your way. Unbeknownst to you, hot molten lava has been gurgling out of the mountain and was now headed your way. It was melting, incinerating, destroying, and annihilating everything in its path.
You dive into the ocean and swim to a nearby boat with debris still falling from the sky plunging into the ocean all around you. As you make it to the boat, you head further out to sea, coughing and gasping, in the now ashy snowstorm falling from the sky.
So much for a dream vacation. In just a matter of minutes, it was transformed into a horrific nightmare.
Of course, I'm talking about the fearsome force of a volcano.
Now, folks, how many of you like to get a suntan next to a volcano? Yeah, even though it would be the world's fastest tan, we wouldn't even dream of doing that, would we? Of course not. And hello. The reason is obvious. Volcanoes are pretty scary, aren't they? Slightly. And yet, here's the irony. Most people today are totally fearful of being burned by a volcano, but they have absolutely no fear of being burned in hell. Why? Because there is no fear of God before their eyes. And that means they're in a heap of trouble. Therefore, in order to help these arrogant people hopefully become more humble people, we're going to continue in our study, The Witness of Creation. And what we've been doing is taking a look at the five different evidences of creation that God has left behind for us, showing us that He's not just real, but that we really can have a personal, intimate relationship with Him, the Creator of the universe, before it's too late. And so far we've seen the first evidence God left behind for us, showing us this amazing truth, is the evidence of an intelligent creation. And then we saw the second evidence was the evidence of a young creation. And then we saw the third evidence was the evidence of a special creation. And then we saw the fourth evidence was the evidence of a judged creation. And then the last four times we saw the fifth evidence was the evidence of a fearful creation. And last time we saw, contrary to the lie of evolution, that yes, dinosaurs did get on and off the ark just like the Bible said. And we saw that by their size and their space, that there was plenty of room for them to get on the ark, and that they used to be called dragons when they got off the ark. And we saw the evidence of them with the biblical proof, the comparison proof, and of course, the historical proof. But that's not all. Once again, God's very merciful to us. He just keeps answering our skeptical questions even when He doesn't have to. The fifth question concerning dinosaurs is, do dinosaurs still live today? You see, you might be thinking, now, this dinosaur to dragon stuff is quite interesting, I must say. But I'm sorry, I need a little bit more proof than just some legends if I'm going to believe that dinosaurs really did get off the ark and walked with man in recent times. And actually, I perfectly understand that kind of thinking. You see, here's the problem, even as Christians. Instead of listening to the Bible, we've been brainwashed by evolution into thinking that the dinosaurs went completely extinct millions and millions of years ago, right? It's in virtually every textbook. It's in virtually all the movies. But that's not what the Bible says. Let's take a look.
Job 46-15. Then the Lord spoke to Job out of the storm, "Brace yourself like a man, I will question you, and you shall answer me. Would you discredit my justice? Would you condemn me to justify yourself? Do you have an arm like God's, and can your voice thunder like his? Then adorn yourself with glory and splendor, and clothe yourself in honor and majesty. Unleash the fury of your wrath, look at every proud man and bring him low, look at every proud man and humble him, crush the wicked where they stand. Bury them all in the dust together, shroud their faces in the grave. Then I myself will admit to you that your own right hand can save you. Look at the behemoth, which I made along with you and which feeds on grass like an ox.
Now folks, according to our text here, that we saw at the beginning of our study, God not only used Behemoth, which was clearly a dinosaur, to teach Job a lesson in whom he should fear the most, i.e. God, but notice what else God said to Job about this dinosaur, this Behemoth. He said to Job, look at Behemoth. Now here's the obvious point. Why in the world would God say to Job look at Behemoth if Behemoth went extinct millions and millions of years ago? How could Job look at Behemoth unless of course there was still a Behemoth, a dinosaur, to look at? God didn't say think about one Job. He didn't say go out and discover one Job. He didn't say go dig one up in the dirt real quick so you can make sense of my object lesson here Job. Are you kidding me? No. God said look at one. Look at Behemoth Job, which I made along with you. And so what we see is that the biblical account clearly teaches that once again, dinosaurs not only got on and off the ark with Noah, but they were still alive after Noah and people like Job could still look at them. Granted, you may not have wanted to touch them, but you certainly could look as was the case with Job. And here's the problem. The only reason why we reject the biblical account of dinosaurs still being alive today is because we've been brainwashed with the evolutionists' account, that they died out millions and millions of years ago. But once again, fortunately, God is gracious to us. Believe it or not, there's tons more proof of dinosaurs still being alive today. And the first way we know dinosaurs still live today is from living fossils. You see, folks, what evolutionists don't tell you is that we find all kinds of creatures that evolutionists say supposedly went extinct millions of years ago, but shocker of shockers, that are still alive today. And not just dinosaurs, but a whole bunch of other creatures as well. And here's the point. That's exactly what you'd expect to find if indeed the biblical account is true, that you could still look at these things. Let's take a look at just a few of them. Supposed extinct fish. In 1938, a 5-foot-long 126-pound coelacanth fish was caught in the Indian Ocean off the coast of Africa. Marjorie Courtney Latimer, a curator at the East London Museum, could not identify the fish. She sent a sketch to J.L.B. Smith at Rhodes University in South Africa, who identified the fish as a coelacanth. From fossils, scientists had declared it extinct for about the same time period as the dinosaurs, but it was actually quite well known to the Madagascan fishermen, who had been catching it for centuries. Because coelacanths have lobed fins, evolutionists thought them to be ancestors of the first amphibians, and hence us. They said that the coelacanth first appeared about 375 million years ago and went extinct about 80 million years ago. However, the discovery of living coelacanths in this century electrified the scientific world. A fish that had thought to have died out with the dinosaurs was found alive. A second one was caught in 1952 off Anjouan Island in the Comores Islands, northwest of Madagascar. Another was discovered off Sulawesi, Indonesia in 1998, and since the first discovery, hundreds have now been caught. The Indonesian locals call the coelacanth Raja Laut, King of the Sea. How could the coelacanth disappear for over 80 million years and then turn up alive and well in the 20th century? Evolutionists try to explain living fossils by calling them primitive, that is, some species was more primitive, but now it is not. However, this primitive-looking coelacanth has a massive organ in its head that has scientists scratching their heads. Some speculate it might be an electroreceptor unlike any that we know about today. Also, it seems that this fish generates an electric field around its body, as an electric eel does. We can't explain its coastal navigation skills. It turns out that coelacanths are not so primitive after all. Furthermore, in 1987 a German naturalist, Hans Fricke, observed and photographed coelacanths in their habitat off Grand Comoro Island. He found that they swam forward, backward, and even tilted head down, but never once walked, crawled, or otherwise moved on the bottom with their lobed fins, as some thought. So the coelacanth would never have moved up on land as hypothesized in the evolutionary scheme. It wasn't a missing link after all, it was a fish and always had been a fish and still alive today. Supposed extinct pigs. In the early 1970s, Ralph M. Wetzel and co-workers from the University of Connecticut discovered living specimens of the chaconne peccary, which he named Catagonus Wagneri. Peccaries are close relatives of pigs and boars. Prior to Wetzel's find, this type of peccary was known only from fossils and had been thought to have died out 10,000 years ago. Wetzel found the living specimens in Patagonia after hearing native stories. The natives called it the Tagua. The Chacon peccary is not only the largest of the three known living species of peccary, but this supposed extinct animal is still alive today. Supposed extinct lizards. Another recent example from the Canary Islands concerns the lizard Galatea gomorrhoena. In June 1999, Spanish scientists reported finding six living specimens, two males, three females, and one juvenile, of this lizard on La Gomera, one of the Canary Islands. Galatea gomorrhoena had previously been considered extinct for nearly 500 years. This lizard measures about half a meter in length, a respectable size for a lizard. Supposed extinct rats. A rodent that came back from the dead after supposedly going extinct millions of years ago appears to be more common than previously thought. The Laotian rock rat, known locally as the Ca Naiu, was identified as a species new to science in 2005. It was spotted at a hunter's market in Laos by researchers from the Wildlife Conservation Society, WCS. A return visit has uncovered more specimens, suggesting the squirrel-like animal may not be that rare. The creature was originally thought to belong to an entirely new rodent family more closely related to rodents in Africa and South America than in Asia. However, after a detailed search through the fossil records of the Natural History Museum in London, the mammal is now believed to be the sole survivor of an ancient group of rodents that died out 11 million years ago. The Laotian rock rat, Laenas enigmamus, described last year by the Wildlife Conservation Society scientists in Laos, is certainly new to science and a genetically distinct species, while also representing the lone survivor of an ancient family, the WCS said. However, it may not be that rare. On a recent visit to a hunter's market in Laos, WCS conservationist Peter Klein found the rats to be quite common, photographing several specimens. Supposed extinct flowers. Most recently, in Nature there is an account of an early Cretaceous flower, Tictogenia perrieri, rediscovered living in Madagascar 85 years after its original identification. The Brachiopod lingula has a different story. Fossils of this organism are found consistently in the rocks from Cambrian levels upward. Today lingula is found living in restricted habitats. This is a living fossil which does not receive a lot of attention. Why not? Supposed extinct trees. Very recently, a live tree called the Wallamai pine was discovered in an Australian wilderness, which was previously unknown except for its dinosaur age fossils. The Wallamai pine represents another of the living fossils that somehow survived from the end of the Cretaceous period, 65 million years, according to evolutionists, with little change. Evolutionists have a bit of explaining to do. The genus of trees, according to evolution, dates back to about 150 million years ago and allegedly coexisted with the dinosaurs. It was thought by some to have become extinct along with the dinosaurs. The find was so significant, a professor of the Royal Botanic Gardens was quoted as saying the find was like finding a live dinosaur. Because the tree has survived virtually unchanged for so long, creationists believe it is proof that neither this tree, nor dinosaurs, are nearly as old as some believe. Supposed extinct mollusks. Even more bizarre is the mollusk, Neopilina, which has survived as a living fossil, with its precursor existent possibly as late as 350 million years ago. The occurrence of appropriate paleoenvironments in those 350 million years of the geologic record are enormous, yet, apparently no precursors to the modern organism were preserved. Why not? Supposed extinct horses. Another discovery of this century is the okapi, Okapia johnstoni, of Africa, which was discovered in the early 1900s. These animals were once used as evidence that the horse had evolved, but as we saw before, it's actually a relative of the giraffe. But the point is, the okapi was once thought to have gone extinct nearly a million years ago, until they were found still living today. Supposed extinct sharks. In 1976, a naval research vessel working in the Hawaiian Islands caught a previously unknown animal when it hauled in its large anchor. The 1,653-pound shark was called Megamouth because of its large, toothy mouth. The megamouth has been compared to the living fossil fish coelacanth, which was thought to be extinct for 65 million years. In the 30 years since its discovery, as of 2009 only 47 megamouth specimens have been caught or sighted. They have been found in the Pacific, Atlantic and Indian Oceans. At least 10 specimens have been found in the vicinity of each of Japan and Taiwan, more than any other single area. Specimens have also been pulled from the waters near Hawaii, California, the Philippines, Indonesia, Australia, Brazil, Senegal, South Africa, and Ecuador. Supposed extinct sponges. The glass sponge was thought to be extinct for 100 million years. the hexactinoid sponges known today to live in deep waters. The 500 species today are mostly found from deep waters 200 to 2,000 meters. The hexactinoid is mostly found in Antarctica because that is where they are more abundant. But the question is, why is it still alive? I thought it went extinct 100 million years ago. People, the logical conclusion of all these living fossils is obvious, as this man points out.
If all of these species are not just still alive but have not evolved in 50 million, 100 million or even 200 million years, then why should we believe that they or anything have evolved?
And apparently this obvious conclusion is why prominent British evolutionist Richard Dawkins had this to say about living fossils.
And we find many of them already in an advanced state of evolution, the very first time they appear. It is as though they were just planted there, without any evolutionary history. Needless to say, this appearance of sudden planting has delighted creationists.
Now folks, first of all, keep in mind that these examples I just gave you are by no means an exhaustive list. One estimate shared how there are over 500 of these kinds of living fossils that have been documented. And secondly, remember the obvious point with all these living fossils. If evolutionists got it wrong with all these other supposed extinct creatures not really being extinct, then gee whiz, could it be that they also got it wrong with dinosaurs being extinct? I mean, if I can still look at a coelacanth today, then why am I surprised when God said to Job, look at a behemoth, a dinosaur, today? I mean, if I didn't know better, I'd say the Bible got it right and evolution got it wrong. Shocker. Dinosaurs do still live today. The second way we know dinosaurs still live today is from living dinosaurs. You see folks, you might be out there thinking, okay, so these living fossils obviously prove that evolution gets it wrong on all kinds of creatures being supposedly extinct for millions of years and yet are still alive. And yeah, I can see the connection how this could be applied to the situation with the dinosaurs. But I'm sorry, if I'm going to believe that dinosaurs really did get off the ark and are still alive today, I don't need to just see a connection, I need to see one with my own eyes. Well again, fortunately God is gracious to ye of little faith. Folks, we not only find living fossils still alive today showing us that evolution gets it wrong all the time about supposed creatures, including dinosaurs, supposedly going extinct millions and millions of years ago, but we even find living dinosaurs today. Not legends. Not just a logical inference from living fossils. But actual eyewitness accounts of people seeing with their own eyes the existence of living dinosaurs still alive today, which by the way is exactly what you'd expect to find if the Bible is right and evolution is wrong. Let's take a look at just a few of those eyewitness accounts. First of all, the odds of finding an actual lived dinosaur is not very great due to several obvious reasons. One, as we saw before, their population has seriously declined due to the changes of the Earth's atmosphere and topography, as well as the changes in their relationship with mankind who now hunted and killed them for food, sport, or even out of fear, that is to protect themselves. Two, there's lots of places on Earth that dinosaurs can easily stay hidden from view, as this man points out.
The world's oceans cover over two-thirds of our planet and average a depth of 10,000 feet, more than twice that of the Grand Canyon. At their deepest, 7 miles, Mount Everest would be completely hidden. There is plenty of room in these vast depths for animals still unknown to modern science as living specimens.
And finally, three, we might come across a dinosaur but not think to even call it a dinosaur. And that's because the blindness caused by evolutionary teachings prohibits people from being able to put two and two together about the true identity of dinosaurs. For instance, as we saw in the previous study, A Judged Creation, lizards have been found up to 23 feet long and weighed over 1,300 pounds. And as On Man pointed out, this starts to explain the real origins of the dinosaurs, which of course means terrible lizard. He stated that if they really did live a long time in the pre-flood world like the Bible states, then note this fact.
A reptile has the potential of growing throughout its life. Unlike other animals, the reptile has no cutoff mechanism whereby it stops growing in size. So, even if reptiles lived only half as long as pre-flood men, we would have to expect gigantic reptiles, dinosaurs, before the flood.
And of course, we do as he continues.
Crocodiles or alligators grow at the rate of 20 or so feet per 100 years. If that's the case, there should be giant alligators' fossils, right? In 1991, alligator bones were found on the banks of the Amazon River. The skull was almost 5 feet long. Based on this, scientists estimated its height to have been 8 feet tall when walking, and its length was 40 feet, the size of a railroad boxcar. Professor Carl Fraley, from Overland Park, Kansas, said the creature probably weighed around 12 tons, and this would make it about a ton heavier than Tyrannosaurus rex, the mightiest of dinosaur predators. In short, if reptiles today live longer, they would be dinosaurs in a few hundred years.
So now, let's put two and two together. If dinosaurs were really just giant terrible lizards that never stopped growing prior to the flood with a longer lifespan and a more lush environment, then today these terrible lizards that got off the ark wouldn't get as big because they don't live as long and don't have as lush of an environment. Therefore, due to the fact that their size is now smaller, we can see them with our very own eyes, but we don't even think of calling them an actual living dinosaur. Let me share with you some interesting examples as this article shares.
There are over 3,000 species of lizards that comprise the suborder Sauria. Many lizards look like miniature dinosaurs and exhibit the same curious appendages. Large lizard fossils that have been discovered are often presented with the dinosaurs. For example, the swimming lizard Mosasaur was 50 feet long and likely weighed about 3 tons. Obviously, extant lizards, like the chameleon, are much smaller. However, various living lizards have some fascinating dinosaur characteristics that might surprise you.
The tuatara, a lizard-like reptile that is found only on a few islands near New Zealand, the tuatara is the only living member of an otherwise extinct reptilian order, Rhynchocephalia, that is said to have flourished in the Triassic and Jurassic period. They have been called living fossils since they appear identical to specimens in the fossil record, and even resembles the lizard-like Glebosaurus. Yet there are no tuatara specimens in more recent layers of the fossil record. Tuataras grow to 31 inches in length and have scaly brown-green skin and a crest of dinosaur-like spines along their back. Some tuataras have been known to live for over 100 years. Tuataras are mostly nocturnal. Their diet consists largely of insects and the occasional small animal. They are anatomically different from lizards and easily distinguished by an extra arch in their skull. Could tuataras really have remained virtually unchanged for hundreds of millions of years while catastrophic environmental changes wiped out dinosaurs, and while descendants of rodent-sized mammals slowly evolved into humans? The iguana and water dragon. The term iguana refers to a large species of typically New World lizards. Lizards are part of the subclass Lepidosauria, which in recent years has been considered a subdivision of the superorder, Dinosauria. Iguanas regularly grow to more than 5 feet in total length. Marine iguanas will often swim along shore but can dive to depths more than 35 feet, remaining submerged for up to 30 minutes feeding on algae. Their sharp spines and tough, flat faces give them a foreboding appearance. When approached, marine iguanas can puff a kind of steam through their noses, intimidating predators like the dragons of old. The common iguana eats both plants and animals, including leaves and fruit, insects, birds, and small mammals. The well-known dinosaur Iguanodon received its name because its teeth resembled those of the iguana. The flying and frilled lizard, some lizards discovered in the fossil record, like Quainiosaurus and Icarosaurus, resemble the flying dragon Draco, which is still found in southeastern Asia. This small lizard does not fly, but leaps and glides hundreds of feet like a flying squirrel. The frilled lizard, Plumitosaurus kingi, lives in northern Australia and New Guinea. When the lizard is threatened, it opens its mouth and brings the frill forward from where it normally rests on its shoulders. In an 8-inch adult, the frill may be 7 inches across. This defensive action intimidates predators, facilitating the lizard's escape. It also can run bipedally, holding its forelegs and tail off the ground. Various lizards are known to use their curious appendages for communication, as well as for defensive purposes. The Australian bearded dragon, for example, utilizes an elaborate social communication system, involving rapid head bobbing, push-ups, arm waving, tail twitching, and displaying its beard. One wonders if some dinosaurs might not have utilized similar means of communication. The thorny devil and horned lizard. Various modern lizards have armor with frills, spikes, and horns like the ancient Triceratops, Ankylosaur, or Stegosaurus. Some chameleons, for example, have three prominent horns, while girdle-tailed lizards have overlapping scaled armor. Both kinds of armored lizards shown to the right sport scales bearing spines. Each can consume vast amounts of ants every day. Found largely in the western United States and Mexico, the well-camouflaged regal-horned lizard will seldom attempt to hide but may defend itself if provoked by puffing up its body and squirting blood, sometimes as far as a few feet, from a reserve behind its eyes. The Moloch horridus or thorny devil is so well-armored from head to tail it is seldom challenged by predators. This spiked lizard lives in dry or desert areas of Australia. In the harsh desert environment, the thorny devil collects water when dew forms on its skin, and thousands of tiny grooves allow the dew to spread quickly over the lizard's body. Once the water reaches its lips, the lizard sips it easily. The gecko and chuckwalla lizards, amongst the 600 species of geckos is the flying gecko, which is so named because of a thin fold of skin from the legs to the side, which when extended allows the gecko to glide. The gecko has long fascinated scientists by its uncanny ability to cling to walls and ceilings, seeming to defy gravity. In searching for the gecko's secret, the feet were studied under 2,000x magnification to reveal many tiny hairs. But it was not until these hairs were placed in a 35,000x magnification of a phase electron microscope that the thousands of tiny suction cups on the hairs were revealed. Also, the chuckwalla lizard that lives in the southern United States has several unique features. These include a blanket of skin that covers his back. In the early morning, the skin is dark to attract the sunlight to warm his blood, but as the desert environment gets extremely hot, it changes to a beige color and keeps the lizard from overheating. A chuckwalla will scurry away from predators to hide in tight cracks and then puff his body out to fill the space and make it nearly impossible to remove him. Because the chuckwalla lives in an environment without water, his biological system builds up salt toxicity over time. But there is a special built-in desalination plant at the top of his head by its nose. Before the salt in his bloodstream reaches dangerous levels, the blood is shunted through this system and the salt is removed. From time to time, the chuckwalla sneezes out pure salt crystals. We should consider some of these bizarre biological systems in common lizards before too quickly passing off curious details in historical accounts involving the ancient dragons. Monitor lizards, perhaps no creature that has been proven to exist today appears so much alike the ancient dinosaurs than the large monitor lizards. It would be expected that long-lived monitor lizards attained even greater size under the optimal conditions of the early Earth. In fact, the skeleton of a 20-foot giant monitor lizard, Megalania, has been discovered in Australia. It probably weighed about 2 tons and hunted giant kangaroos. Komodo dragon. In 1910, Lieutenant Stein van Hensbroek of the Dutch Colonial Administration heard stories about a living dinosaur in Indonesia. Ridicule gave way to amazement as the Komodo dragons were discovered. They can grow up to 10 feet and might weigh 300 pounds. This, the biggest of known lizards, lives exclusively in Indonesia, mainly on Komodo Island. Like other members of the monitor lizard family, they are carnivorous, feeding on animals as large as a deer or a pig. They can be fierce if cornered. Often the baby Komodo dragons climb trees like an iguana. The large adults will burrow or pass the heat of day under bushes, coming out in the morning and evening. Like several other monitors, Komodo dragons swim well, sometimes swimming to small islands where they are a threat to domestic livestock. In some ways, these creatures resemble the ancient dinosaurs like the Echinodontosaurus. Other monitor lizards. There are dozens of species of monitor lizards found in Africa, Asia, Indonesia, New Guinea, and Australia. Indian monitors are thought to have been transported by natives to the Polynesian islands, possibly as a food source. Monitors have a unique ability to greatly increase the size of the mouth cavity, enabling them to swallow their prey whole. The Nile monitor is the largest lizard in Africa, sports a distinctive blue tongue, and has been seen as long as 8 feet. It will lay eggs in termite mounds, which provide a natural incubation. The earless monitor is a semi-aquatic lizard that is native to Borneo. These lizards, along with some other reptiles, continue growing their entire life. People don't live to be 900 years old anymore as they used to before the flood. Dragonflies don't get to be 3 feet like they used to before the flood. Grasshoppers don't get to be 2 feet long like they used to before the flood, and dinosaurs don't get 150 feet long like they used to before the flood. But that doesn't mean we don't see any dinosaurs still alive today. Rather, they could be right under our noses, but thanks to the brainwashing of evolution, we don't even think to call them dinosaurs. But be that as it may, even though the odds of seeing with our own eyes an actual living dinosaur today may not be great due to their decrease in population and size and ability to hide, there are still actual eyewitness accounts of people seeing them with their own eyes. And the first type of dinosaur people still see with their own eyes is water dinosaurs. Now, first of all, the fact that we have any eyewitness accounts, including photos, is amazing, as this man points out.
People say, if the creature is really over there, why don't they get a good picture of it? That is a fair question. Let me turn it around and ask a question. Have you ever seen a picture of a car wreck as it happened? You won't either, at least not very often. There have been thousands of wrecks. It happens so fast that you say, oh wow. They're going to crash. Crash. Here's my camera. I should have gotten a picture of that. You think of it after it happened. If you are out swimming or fishing, and all of a sudden you see a dinosaur, you say, oh wow. He is gone. I should have taken a picture. You don't think of it when it happens. I don't fault folks for not getting a good photograph. Do you have a camera with you right this second? If one crashed through your wall and then exited the scene, you would be called a liar for the rest of your life. Right.
But even so, again, God is gracious to us. Let's take a look at some actual eyewitness accounts.
During the age of sailing ships, which really started with Columbus, up until about 100 years ago when they went to diesel engines or steam engines, for about a 400-year span of human history was called the Great Age of Sailing Ships. During this time there are thousands of legends of people sighting sea monsters.
Well, if you're in a sailing boat it's pretty quiet going through the water.
Today, with your diesel engine on board of your metal hull boat, sound travels great underwater, they can hear you coming 100 miles away. They've learned to avoid the shipping lanes, I'm sure. But, during this age of sailing ships, there are many stories of people sighting sea monsters. In 1555 Olaus Magus wrote a book called Historia de Gentibus Septentrionalibus in which he describes a monstrous fish as follows: their forms are horrible, their heads square, all set with prickles, and they have long sharp horns round about like a tree rooted up by the roots. They are 10 or 12 cubits long, very black, with huge eyes. The apple of the eye is of 1 cubit, and is red and fiery coloured, which in the dark night appears to fishermen afar off under waters, as a burning fire, having hairs like goose feathers. De Montfort says its huge protruding eyes actually seem to flash fire. The giant squid has the largest eyes of any animal.
One observer said its skin was brilliant carmine red. A dictionary in 1766 defines the word sea dragon. It said, a marine monster caught in England in 1749, resembling, in some degree, an alligator, but having 2 large fins which served for swimming or flying.
It had 2 legs terminating in hoofs, like those of an ass.
Its body was covered with impenetrable scales, and it had 5 rows of teeth. Strange creature.
In 1845 a description of a sea monster says there was boiling of the water on both sides of it and moved like a snake. In 1848, Captain Petumke of the HMS Daedalus, and his crew, watched a 60-foot sea monster swim directly under their boat.
They watched it for 20 minutes. The sailors on board said, "Captain, please don't say anything about this.
Don't write it in the log book for sure because we are going to get laughed at for the rest of our lives. If we go back to port and tell them that we saw a dinosaur, they are going to laugh at us. What would happen to you if you were fishing in the Gulf of Mexico and spotted a dinosaur?
When you returned home and said, 'Hey,
I saw a dinosaur,' they would find you one of those long-sleeved jackets that tie in the back. Right? The very idea of a dinosaur still living is too far out for some folks to believe.
However, there are lots of stories of giant critters in the sea. Well, he put it in the logbook anyway. Sure enough, they got laughed at.
In 1879 a giant squid washed ashore and was churning the water into foam by the motion of its immense arms and tail ejecting large volumes of water. Frederick Aldrich, an expert on giant squid, examined a 20-foot-long immature specimen that he believed could grow to 150 feet in length. Natural History of Norway by Bishop Erik Fontopodam reported sea monsters.
There are many stories in his book he wrote. Missionary Hans Egede, from Greenland, tells the story of sighting a sea monster off the coast of Greenland. He said that it stuck its head up level with the top of the ship. It had 2 little flippers, flappers as he calls them, on the front. In the book, Monsters of the Deep by Thomas Helm, who died recently, but he's from Crestview, Florida.
He tells the story of about the Monongahela, the ship that actually shot, killed, and cut up and ate part of a 103-foot, 6-inch long sea monster. Another ship stopped to see what on earth was going on.
They said, "Look at this, 103-foot sea monster." The Monongahela sold the oil, they boiled the blubber down to the oil, and sold it to the other ship. They said, "Look, fellows, we're out for whales, we're going after whales. We got the bones of this sea monster in the hull of the Monongahela.
You guys can take this oil, go back to port, tell them we'll be back in 6 months and show them the proof." 6 months later the Monongahela never showed up.
A year later, never showed up.
Sometime after that some boards washed on the shore of Japan, I believe, that said Monongahela on the side.
The ship sank in a storm.
But the sailors that saw it said, "Look, it was clear sea serpent oil.
We've never seen anything like it, we saw the creature ourselves."
But People laughed at them anyways, because they lacked proof. During World War I, a German submarine commander, a U-boat captain, said he sank a British ship. When it exploded underwater, a 60-foot-long sea monster came flying up out of the water, had big paddle-shaped flippers, kind of like a plesiosaurus, had an alligator-shaped head, maybe it was a Kronosaurus. Captain Georg von Forstner described what happened. On July 30, 1915, our U-28 torpedoed the British steamer Iberian carrying a rich cargo in the North Atlantic. The steamer sank quickly, the bow sticking almost vertically into the air.
When it had gone for about 25 seconds, there was a violent explosion.
A little later, pieces of wreckage, and among them a gigantic sea animal, writhing and struggling wildly, was shot out of the water to a height of 60 to 100 feet. At that moment I had with me in the conning tower my officers of the watch, the chief engineer, the navigator, and the helmsman. Simultaneously we all drew one another's attention to this wonder of the seas. We were unable to identify it.
We did not have time to take a photograph, for the animal sank out of sight after 10 or 15 seconds.
It was about 60 feet long, was like a crocodile in shape and had four limbs with powerful webbed feet and a long tail tapering to a point. One of the largest crocodiles ever caught was a 20-feet-long specimen harpooned in 1960 near Borroloola in Australia's Northern Territory. This is not even half the size of the monster as described by the U-28 commander. In June 1983, a carcass was found on Bungalow Beach in Gambia, but was unavailable for analysis by those who tried to identify it. It was found and examined by Owen Burham, who had no camera, and so was only able to bring back a description and measurements. Working on these, noted zoologist Dr. Carl P. N. Schukershort listed six possible identities. Only one, the shepherd's beaked whale, Tasmacetus shepherdi, was a creature known to be still living in today's oceans.
However, he considers it as the least likely of them. The other five possibilities were prehistoric marine animals.
Two of these bear out the description of the leviathan, and of the creature seen by the U-28. One was the mosasaur, a giant marine version of the monitor lizards, and the other was a thalattozoochian, a kind of sea crocodile supposedly extinct for 110 million years. Dr. Schuker believes the latter to be the most likely contender. The Navy ship USS Stein tangled with such a creature on its way to track submarines near South America. When its sonar equipment suddenly stopped working, the captain headed the ship back for repairs at the Long Beach Naval Dockyard.
When the tough underwater sonar dome was examined in dry dock, the crew found a big surprise.
The rubber covering that protects the dome was torn and battered with dozens of big gouges.
Hundreds of sharp, hollow teeth, or claws, were broken off in the covering. Some were longer than an inch.
It looked as if some sea creature had been attracted to the underwater sound of the sonar and tried to bite it and break it.
Naval Oceans Center made a decision. The animal must have been extremely large and of species still unknown to science.
There are stories of giant octopuses pulling ships underwater. But you say, come on, octopuses never get that big.
Oh, they get pretty big. You see, octopuses never stop growing, just like reptiles. Now stop and think about it.
If you were an animal that never stopped growing, it might be possible for you to reach the magical size where you would become big enough that you no longer had any enemies.
They used to chase you, now you chase them.
Did you know that an octopus washed up on beach in St. Augustine, Florida?
It was 200 feet across and weighed 5 tons. That's not even the biggest one.
A whale was killed near Seattle, Washington. Inside the whale's stomach was one arm to an octopus that was 150 feet long.
There are some awfully big critters out there in the ocean, really big ones.
At Yale University, they've got a model of a giant squid hanging up there in their Peabody Museum. A baby giant squid washed up on the beach in New Zealand, they said full grown it would have been 150 feet long. Not only that, there have been some giant squids found out there.
A 57-foot squid washed up on the beach in Canada in 1877.
Just a few years ago, in the late 1980s, an 80-foot squid washed up on the beach in Nova Scotia, Canada.
There's a lake in northern Scotland called Loch Ness. Loch Ness is a huge lake, 24 miles long, about 1.5 miles wide. It's nearly 1,000 feet deep in places. It has been reported, or calculated I should say, that Loch Ness is capable of holding every person in the world. All 6 billion people in the world could go drown in Loch Ness at the same time. It's a big lake.
The problem with Loch Ness is it's up in the mountains, and if you wanted to see the lake, you had to either travel upriver 7 miles from the town of Inverness or you had to climb over the mountains to get there, until 1933 when they decided to go in with a bulldozer and dynamite and put a roadbed along the edge of Loch Ness.
Because there really was no place to put a road. So they chiseled a groove in the mountains and put a road there.
In 1933, there were 52 separate sightings the first year the road was in.
By 1960, there had been 9,000 reported sightings of the Loch Ness Monster.
Today it is over 11,000.
There are 11,000 people that have claimed they have seen something in Loch Ness. Now, of course, there are always hoaxes and frauds. I'm not going to say that all 11,000 are legitimate.
But just because there are some hoaxes and frauds doesn't mean they are all hoaxes and frauds. World Book Encyclopedia spent a lot of money to take a submarine from Georgia over to Scotland and put it down in Loch Ness. Dan Taylor went down in the submarine.
And here is what he said about it. He said, "Nessie was pretty elusive. I thought I got her. Something was lying on the bottom, and the wash from it threw my submarine way off course." He's building another sub, by the way, to go back.
He still wants to write a capture of the Loch Ness Monster with a mini sub. Well, they gave up on the sub idea pretty much because the water is so black.
It's like being in a giant cup of coffee. Visibility is zero. You turn your spotlights on and the light just doesn't penetrate.
So instead they put boats all the way across the top of the lake and they called it Operation Deep Scan.
And they scanned the bottom of Loch Ness.
As far as anybody knows, that's the first time there's been a sonar scan of the lake bottom.
They said the bottom of the lake is wrinkled up like a raisin. Lots of places to hide. There were caves going off to the side also of Loch Ness.
I'm sure the critter heard 24 boats coming down the lake and said, "Time to go someplace."
One guy got a picture of a giant diamond-shaped flipper. This was taken by the Academy of Applied Science. Underwater photography is difficult because the water is so black. But they took those pictures with a sonar-activated camera. One man did get a picture of Nessie with its mouth open.
That picture is from Reader's Digest Strange Stories. Many people have said they have seen humps sticking up out of the water moving across the lake at very great speeds.
Tim Dinsdale got good film footage of almost a minute of this creature going across the lake. And it wasn't a boat, it wasn't a submarine.
The Royal Air Force Academy or somebody over there in England analyzed the photo and said, "This is a live animate object." Something slammed past a couple of scientists on a boat in Brazil in 1905.
The guys who saw this creature were on some yacht.
They said it had a dorsal fin 6 feet long and 2 feet high.
And a small head on a neck about 7 or 8 feet long in front of the fin. Two experienced British naturalists saw it. They said there was a good-sized body under the water. But couldn't see the details. Down by New Zealand there is a place where the Japanese do a lot of fishing. It's called the Chatham Rise because at that point the water is only 900 feet deep.
But down by New Zealand they fish, and one day they were fishing down there in 1977 with this gigantic fishing boat. Dragging their massive nets down across the bottom, they pulled up a dead, rotten, stinking carcass from 900 feet down. It was 32 feet long, and weighed 4,000 pounds, apparently a plesiosaurus. It stunk so badly that they photographed it a bunch of times and threw it back.
They made sketches of the thing. A marine biologist on board made the sketches. Said it had four flippers and a skinny neck.
Of course, the typical humanist or evolutionist answer to this is that it was a basking shark. And they go through all of their details about the gill slits rotting away and the fins rotting away. The guys who had it on board in their hands said, "Look, we know what basking sharks are. It was not a basking shark." It is thought-provoking to consider that the Japanese have no problem with officially owning up to the present-day existence of dragons, sea monsters or dinosaurs. Indeed, they even issued a postage stamp with a picture of a plesiosaurus to commemorate the find. Only we in the West seem to have a problem with the present-day existence of these creatures, for only 9 days after the appearance of the Times article, it was somberly announced on the 30th of July 1977 by the BBC that the monster only looked like a plesiosaurus. It in fact was a shark that had decomposed in such a way as to convey the impression that it had a long neck, a small head and four large paddles. How they, or their informants at the Natural History Museum in Kensington, could tell this, since the creature was no longer available for examination, we can only guess at, especially considering that the marine biologist on board the vessel had sketched the creature's skeletal structure and it is nothing like that of a shark.
Marine biologists are highly trained scientists whose ability to detect disease and mutations in fish and marine mammals is crucial to the health of the consumer, let alone the profits of the fishing vessel concerned, so their knowledge of marine life is necessarily very great.
Yet the BBC would have us believe that Michihiko Yano, the government-trained and highly qualified marine biologist who examined, photographed and measured the monster, wouldn't know a dead shark when he saw one.
In Russia, there have been several sightings in some different lakes in Russia. There is one lake they call Mystery Lake.
Some scientists went up there and said they saw a creature with a big fin on its back and a long skinny neck. A different spot up in the north coast of Russia in the Arctic Ocean, what looked like a dinosaur washed up on coast just after a storm in the Arctic in 1994.
A Russian news service reported the carcass was 39 feet long. Well, what is that? In Japan, there are several different lakes that are reporting creatures similar to this. There's one they say has a long neck, and it's an eel-like monster. Many people have seen it. A different lake in Japan has a creature that they've nicknamed Issy. They've got a statue of it up there by the lake. Whatever it is. In China, there's been something seen over there in one of the lakes. They call it an Uso. Unidentified swimming object. The monster was golden yellow.
It had a long neck and a beard and a horned head the size of a wash basin. More than 1,000 people had seen a dinosaur-like monster in two sightings around Siam Lake in Xinjiang.
What on earth is that?
Just a few years ago up in Sweden, there was an expedition to go to one of the giant lakes up there. 450 people have reported they've seen something awfully big in that lake in Sweden. Canada has 20 different lakes that are still getting regularly reported sightings of dinosaur-like creatures still alive.
I've got the article right here about Canada's lake monster. As well as names and addresses of many people who have claimed they've seen this creature. There are articles in the paper all of the time about Nessie's Canadian cousin.
From Canada, Professor P. LeBlond of the University of British Columbia told a meeting of zoologists about the many sightings of Caddy-short for Cadborosaurus, around the British Columbia coast and as far south as Oregon.
In southern British Columbia, there is a big lake in the town of Kelowna. The lake is called Okanagan. It is 80 miles long.
Many people there have reported a creature called the Ogopogo.
There are songs about it.
There is a $1 million reward for anyone who can capture the Ogopogo. An article about Ogopogo says, thousands have seen something strange in this narrow, 80-mile-long lake in southern British Columbia.
Keith Ross was 67 and he'd been fishing out there since he was 5 years old. He said the creature was 40 to 50 feet long. It had a wide mouth and 4-foot tusks like a walrus, as well as other pointed, sharp teeth about the size of his finger. It chased their boat for 1 to 2 miles. Its head was out of the water about 15 feet. It can't be a fish because they have to breathe underwater.
He said it was close to a plesiosaur but not exact.
What he saw had a 2-foot thick, 8 to 9 foot long neck. 9-inch diameter eyes with yellow/red circles around them. And they were set at an angle from the front, not on the side like a fish.
He could see no visible means of propulsion as it swam toward them. It was grayish-brown, covered in barnacles, rough textured and did not appear to have scales. They were 6 miles south of Cape Sable Island, Nova Scotia, Canada.
The water was 180 feet deep and flat calm. He said, "I don't want to see it again."
On the coast of California, in Monterey Bay, something washed up on the beach in 1925. It came to be known as California's Nessie.
You can see the head of that creature as it lay on the beach.
The guy in the background has a rifle in case it moves again.
The neck was 20 feet long.
Some people tried to say it was some rare form of beached whale.
Excuse me, show me any neck on a whale.
The guys who examined it, like the president of the Natural History Society in British Columbia, said, "My examination of the monster was quite thorough.
It had no teeth. Its head is large and the neck is 20 feet long. I would call it a type of plesiosaurus. People watched it get killed a couple of days earlier. Some fishermen had seen it fighting with a group of seals. And apparently it lost the battle and rolled up on the beach a few days later. In the 1930s and 40s, these creatures were still being reported, same family, I guess."
In Monterey Bay you go out a few miles and it drops off to 9,000 feet deep. There is a big trench out there. Real deep water. During the 1930s and 40s the Sardine Fleet, which at that time was the sardine capital of the world, reported seeing something.
They said one account said a whole crew, 12 men, watched this creature.
One report described the creature as surfacing near a fishing boat and staring at the crew with large baleful eyes from a rounded head that topped a long slender neck.
Notice the description. The head is rounded on a long skinny neck. They said it stuck out of the water a distance of 8 or more feet. There is a lake between New York and Vermont called Lake Champlain. It's a big lake. Many folks have reported the Lake Champlain monster.
It appears in newspapers up in that region all of the time. There used to be a book in print called Champ, Beyond the Legend. It shared the account of a lady named Sandy Mancy describing the creature that she saw. She and her husband and two kids watched it for 10 minutes. When asked, "Do you think you saw a dinosaur?" She said, "Oh no, I know I saw a dinosaur."
This was just in 1977. Somebody tried to tell Sandy Mancy that what she saw was a duck. She said, "If that was a duck, it was a 2,000-pound duck." She said, "My husband and I were standing at the edge of Lake Champlain on the Vermont side, and our two children were playing in the water.
All of a sudden, we noticed this turbulence in the water, and then it slowly came up.
It was looking around from right to left. It looked kind of nervous. We watched it for 10 minutes. My husband handed me the camera.
I dropped to my knees because my legs just buckled out from under me, but I snapped off one picture. We were looking at a dinosaur." In 1998, Discover magazine reported in Lake Champlain, 58 passengers aboard the Ethan Allen reported that a creature 30 to 35 feet long with 3 to 5 humps cruised with the boat about 200 feet off the port side for 5 minutes.
"Don't tell me it was a carp or a sturgeon," said the skipper.
"If it was a fish, it weighed 3,000 or 5,000 pounds. Dennis Fields, a former missionary to Far North Queensland's Kuku-Yalanji tribes people, told the Answers in Genesis Ministry in Australia some years ago of a story the elders of the tribe told him, of a creature called Yaru, or Yaba. The tribe inhabits the rainforest regions, where there are a number of waterholes in which, in earlier days, Yaru was said to live. There is a story of how the Yaru devoured a young maiden."
The missionary asked one of the tribe's artists to paint the story for him.
The tribal artist, with very little formal education, had no knowledge of what so-called prehistoric animals looked like, and was drawing only from the descriptions handed down in the ancient stories. The painting, later donated to Answers in Genesis, shows a creature with a remarkable resemblance to the extinct Plesiosaurus. Most evolutionists, however, find this unacceptable, since they insist such creatures vanished with the dinosaurs over 65 million years ago. For centuries, the Dharug people have spoken of the mighty Mirala, whose home is the Hawkesbury River near Sydney. Sightings of plesiosaur-like creatures in this river have continued to modern times, with some estimating the creature at up to 50 feet long. 35 tons of something big and dead was found on the beach in Tecaluta, Mexico in March, 1969, and whatever it was, it certainly received a great deal of publicity. The strange carcass's serpent-like body was covered with hard-jointed armor.
A 10-foot bone tusk estimated to weigh a ton protruded from its head.
UPI reported that biologists thought that the creature might have been a narwhal, which has a long tusk, but that after seeing the carcass, they could not match it with any sea creature known to man. Morgour is a giant sea creature that many people have seen over the years in the Falmouth Bay area of Cornwall.
The word Morgour means sea giant in Cornish, and it is probably the most famous sea serpent in the world. The Loch Ness Monster is a freshwater creature.
Of course, the sea serpent is probably just a legend, isn't it?
Well, actually many people have seen it over the years, including many fishermen. In 1876, two fishermen caught a sea serpent in their nets in Gerrans Bay.
50 years later, 1926, a similar creature was caught in the nets of some other fishermen. The creature was described as 20 feet long with an 8-foot tail, scaly legs and a beak-like head.
Then there was a period with few sightings until the 1970s.
In September 1975, Morgour was spotted off Pendennis Point in Falmouth by a man and a woman out on an evening stroll.
They described a hump-backed creature with a long neck, stumpy horns and bristles down its back.
Again in 1975, it was spotted in the Helford, near Durgan. Two separate sightings off Rosmullion Head took place in January 1976, one of which was by two women from London, who no doubt would not even have heard of the legend. It was described as being 30 to 40 feet long and looking like a prehistoric creature. 2 months later, the Falmouth Packet published some pictures of the Morgower taken by a local lady. A woman known only as Mary F. claimed to have sighted Morgower in February 1976, and she was able to take two photographs. She submitted the photos anonymously to the local newspaper, the Falmouth Packet, which published them on its front page on March 5, 1976. Mary F. included a note containing the following description of what she had seen. It looked like an elephant waving its trunk, but the trunk was a long neck with a small head on the end, like a snake's head. It had humps on the back which moved in a funny way. The color was black or very dark brown, and the skin seemed to be like a sea lion's. The animal frightened me. I would not like to see it any closer. I do not like the way it moved when swimming. She also indicated that the creature was about 15 to 18 feet long, and that it was visible only for a few seconds. She apologized for the poor quality of her photography, writing that, "The pictures are not very clear because of the sun shining right into the camera and a haze on the water. Also, I took them very quickly indeed." In 1999, video footage of a creature swimming in the sea off Gerrans Bay has been captured by local man John Holmes and has confounded experts. The 49-year-old from Sticker had been filming his wife swimming in the sea when he spotted what he described as a snake-like creature. He told BBC Radio Cornwall, "I was filming my wife and had climbed on a rock to admire the view across the bay and I thought I heard a splash. A bizarre movement caught my attention about 250 meters offshore and this thing appeared to be standing about 1 meter above sea level." Mr. Holmes thought he was looking at the fin of a shark or a killer whale at first. "I then saw a snake-like head and neck which appeared to be raised out of the water.
I was so shocked by what I saw that I almost fell off the rock. I screamed to my wife and she climbed out of the water.
I only saw it in the water for a brief amount of time." Mr. Holmes, who worked for the National History Museum in London for 19 years, has his own theory. "I have gone through all the textbooks to try and work out what this may have been, and my theory is that it could be a living fossil."
The Bible talks about the dragons in the waters. Dragons in the sea.
You know, it's obvious that dinosaurs, if they are still living, the ones in the water would be the last ones killed.
It's a lot harder to exterminate them than it is the ones on land. Many people have seen these critters, and they are not all lunatics. There must be something to it. The whole problem is how you look at it from the beginning.
The second type of dinosaur people still see with their own eyes are land dinosaurs. Even though I agree that there's probably a lot more dinosaurs still alive in the water than they would be on land, once again, to me, the graciousness of God comes through. Let's take a look at some actual eyewitness accounts of dinosaurs on land. British explorer Colonel John Blashford Snell returned from an isolated Nepalese valley in March with photos of living creatures, which looked something like mammoths or extinct stegodons. The Bible says in the book of Job that there was an animal named Behemoth that God describes in Job chapter 40. And it says this animal, Behemoth, leath under the shady trees in the cover of the reed and fens. The word fens is an archaic English word that means the swamp.
Behemoth lives in the swamp.
Well, the biggest swamp in the world today is the Likwala swamp in the middle of Africa. Mostly in the Congo but partly in Zaire.
That swamp is 55,000 square miles of swampland.
That means it is bigger than the whole state of Arkansas. It's bigger than many of the states in America.
Almost as big as Georgia.
Georgia is 58,000 square miles. That swamp was taken over by the Belgians in 1880 and it was called the Belgian Congo. It was called the Belgian Congo up until 1960. Well, explorers began going into that swamp in 1880, and they began coming back with reports that there are dinosaurs still alive.
In 1910, an article appeared in the New York Herald.
Is a brontosaurus roaming Africa's wilds?
Of course, we have since discovered there was no brontosaurus. They had the wrong head on the skeleton.
But probably something more like a diplodocus or an apatosaurus. In 1948, another article appeared in the Saturday Evening Post. The author said, "A well-known South African big game hunter, named Mr. Gobler, returned from a trip to Angola and announced to the Cape Town newspaper that there was an animal of large dimensions, the description of which could only fit a dinosaur, dwelling in the Dilolo swamps.
It has the head and tail of a lizard.
In different parts of the area over there, they have different names for the same creature, depending upon their local language. In 1980, Dr. Roy Mackle from the University of Chicago had read all of these stories about those creatures still alive in African swamps. He was a microbiology professor.
So he decided he should go to the Congo swamps and check it out for himself. He went over to the swamps and spent 6 weeks. He said it's the most miserable swamp in the world.
Right on the equator.
95 degrees all the time. And 95% humidity all of the time.
Mosquitoes landed on them at the rate of 1,000 per hour.
Just a miserable place to go. They were there for 6 weeks.
They talked to the natives that lived in the swamp and said, "Do you have any crocodiles in this swamp?" And they said, "Oh, white man, we have big crocodiles." They paced off on the sandbar how long they were and nobody would believe them. Until 1983 or 1984, one of the expeditions that went to that swamp saw a 50-foot crocodile. Now if you are a pygmy, 4 feet 4 inches tall, a 50-footer looks real big to you.
See, crocodiles never stop growing either.
Once you pass that magical point where you no longer have any enemies, it's all downhill.
As Drive, Mackle continued to show the natives the pictures. He had a picture book of many different animals, some that lived in the swamp, and some that didn't. He was going to test the natives to see if they were telling the truth. As they would thumb through the pages, they would say, "Oh yes, hippopotamus. Yeah, we've got that one. Turn the page. Yep.
Crocodiles, we have those. Grizzly bear.
No, we have never seen that animal."
Dr. Mackle turned the page and came to the picture of an apatosaurus, and the natives said, "Oh yes, that's Moklambembe, he lives out in the swamp."
"What's next? You know, turn the page. What else do you want to know?" It was no big deal to them. Dr. Mackle said, "Moklambembe? You mean to tell me that you have an apatosaurus living in the swamp?"
"Don't you know, that's a dinosaur?
They've been dead for 70 million years." The natives said, "We're sorry, we didn't know that. We've never been to the University of Chicago to study evolution.
All that we know is that we see one once in a while as we fish out there."
"Apatosaurus is still alive? Now, don't become excited. They are not 150 feet long like they used to be."
The natives claim that Moklambembe is only about 25 or 30 feet long.
They say his body is about the size of a hippopotamus, but his neck and tail are real long. Which fits the pattern, by the way. The natives claimed that Moklambembe lived in the water and was very rarely seen.
The natives that had lived there a lifetime may only have seen him once or twice, or they may never have seen him, but they did claim to hear him from time to time.
They claimed that he lived under the water and under the shade of the trees.
Ah.
Kind of like in the Book of Job, he lieth under the shady trees, in the cover of the reed, and fens. That is exactly what God told Job.
They said that Behemoth, this animal Moklambembe, would stick his long neck out and eat plants along the side of the rivers.
They said that he was active at night, which means he was not often seen in the daytime. They live in caves or they live underwater.
And they come out, barely stick their necks out and grab the plants on the side of the river.
Their favorite plant is the Malombo plant.
It's got a fruit kind of like an apple on it, only harder than an apple.
And the animals just love these things.
And the natives said, "If you'd like to find Moklambembe, just travel through the swamp until you find lots of Malombo plants and no hippopotamus. Hippos like to eat it also, but Moklambembe doesn't like hippos, so he drives them out of the river or the swamp and he takes over that area for himself." They did find footprints of the creatures on shore.
Apparently they come out at night to get more plants and the footprints had claw marks on them. Elephants and hippos are about the same size, but they do not have claws on their feet.
The natives claim that these animals will sometimes surprise you when you are going in your canoe through the swampy area and they will come up out of the river, or the swamp holes they call them. And if you happen to get too close to it and startle it, its tail will smash your canoe and he will drown you.
But he won't eat you if that's any consolation. They reported that he is not friendly at all.
His very sensitive hearing enables him to duck under the water when he hears you coming, which makes your chances of spotting him close to zero.
The natives claimed that one of their ancestors had killed one of these animals.
Dr. Mackle asked the natives, "Does Moklambembe ever die?
Do you ever see a dead one?" They said, "Oh, Moklambembe is the god of the river. He never dies." Of course,
That is an exaggeration. He said, do you ever kill one to eat it? They said, oh no. Our grandfathers killed and ate one, and they all died.
Herman Regustas from Los Angeles, from Jet Propulsion Laboratory, took an expedition in the 1980s. When he came back, the Los Angeles newspaper carried this article about a dinosaur-like creature that was photographed.
And the photograph was kind of fuzzy. Regustas said that the humidity is so bad over there, just survival is a full-time job. Keeping your equipment dry and serviceable is another whole set of problems.
And then being alert enough when you do get a 5 or 10 second glimpse of something to do something with it is another whole set of problems. People often say, well, why doesn't someone get a good, clear photograph?
Well, that's a fair question. Let me ask you a question. How many of you have ever seen a car wreck? You watched it happen. You saw an accident? I'd like to see you get a picture of one as it happens.
In the first place, who has got a camera with them at all times?
And if you did have a camera and you saw an accident, you wouldn't think of it in time. You are so caught up in the moment. So I think that's part of the problem with these sightings of the dinosaurs still alive. Certainly in the African swamp, you are just worried about survival and mosquitoes and everything else. Regustas said the creature was dark brown.
The skin appeared slick and smooth with a long neck and a small head. Herman Regustas and his wife Kia saw this creature.
They heard it making a roar. Many other members of the expedition, including government officials, heard it and saw it. The natives claim these animals live in caves along the side of the swamp.
And they eat plants for a while, and when there are not enough plants, they move on someplace else. So it's not a simple matter of, hey, let's drive over to Africa and take a picture and drive back home.
It's just not quite that simple.
In the first place, this area is almost as big as Georgia, and they said you could average about 1 mile per hour traveling through this impenetrable swamp.
It would take you all day to go 8 or 10 miles.
If I told you there were 100 elephants hiding in Georgia and you can only go 1 mile an hour and I want you to find them.
You'd better bring a lunch. You're going to be there for a while.
Right?
This Moklambembe creature has been reported by many expeditions by people who have gone over there. Including William Gibbons, from Canada. He's been over there 3 times.
A missionary was there for 42 years as a missionary.
His name is Eugene Thomas. When asked about dinosaurs in the swamp, he said, I have lived there for 40 years, and have traveled extensively in that swamp. I generally stay in the village with the natives. He went on to say, I have never seen one, but there is no doubt in my mind that there are some dinosaurs in that swamp.
I have 2 pygmies in my church that helped kill one back in the 1950s. When asked if that was the same story that Roy Mackle writes about in his book, A Living Dinosaur? In Search of Moklambembe. He said, yes, those 2 pygmies were interviewed by Dr. Mackle when he was over here.
They are Christians now. I myself have heard the dinosaurs at night.
He said that you can hear them at night, roaring like giant lizards. In 1983, an expedition led by Marcelon Agnania left the Brazzaville, Congo, the capital of Congo, for the Congo swamp. Marcelon and his group of scientists traveled into the swamp.
He also went with Dr. Mackle on his second expedition.
Marcelon said, man, I didn't know there were dinosaurs in my own backyard.
Dinosaurs just 500 miles from my house. Nobody goes into that swamp. Eugene Thomas, the missionary, said, that swamp is uninhabited and uninhabitable.
You couldn't live there, and you wouldn't want to if you could.
It's a miserable place.
Marcelon, along with several of his scientists, went in there and saw one of the animals. He grabbed his camera and snapped off several pictures before he realized that he had forgotten to take off the lens cap.
When you go deer hunting, they call it buck fever. I don't know what they call it when you go Moklambembe hunting. He said. I didn't get a picture, but I'll draw you a sketch.
Dr. Mackle traveled all over the swamp, and the story was the same. Oh yes, Moklambembe lives up the stream. They claim that Moklambembes migrate around eating plants as they travel on to the next place, so, they are never in the same location for an extended period.
Mackle says that a giant turtle and a monkey-eating bird have been identified with some certainty as living in the Likwala swamps.
An unknown species of large crocodile also seems to inhabit the area. The idea of dinosaur survival is not at all unlikely in view of what the Bible teaches is the real history of the world.
Africa is still a vastly unexplored continent, with ample suitable habitat for dinosaurs. Thousands of square kilometers of impenetrable swamps and thick jungle cover the Congo, and may have never been visited. At the end of the 19th century, Scientific American recorded the following remarkable events. The Brazilian minister at La Paz, Bolivia, had remitted to the Minister of Foreign Affairs in Rio photographs of drawings of an extraordinary saurian killed on the Beni after receiving 36 balls. By order of the President of Bolivia, the dried body, which had been preserved in Asuncion, was sent to La Paz. The monster was reported to be 39 feet from snout to point of the tail, which latter was flattened. Its head resemblance the head of a dog and its legs were short, ending with formidable claws. The legs and abdomen sported a kind of scale armor, and all the back is protected by a still thicker and double cuirass, starting from behind the ears of the anterior head, and continuing to the tail. The neck is long, and the belly large and almost dragging on the ground. In 1907, Lieutenant Colonel Percy Fawcett of the British Army was sent to mark the boundaries between Brazil and Peru. He was an officer in the Royal Engineers and was well known as a meticulous recorder of facts. In the Beni swamps of Madre de Dios, Colonel P.H. Fawcett saw an animal he believed to be Diplodocus. The Diplodocus story is confirmed by many of the tribes east of the Ucajali, a region. The intrepid explorer also picked up reports of huge monsters inhabiting the swamps near the Madidi River in Bolivia. There are snakes and insects unknown to scientists, and in the forests of the Madidi, some mysterious and enormous beast has frequently been disturbed in the swamps, possibly a primeval monster like those reported in other parts of the continent. Certainly tracks have been found belonging to no known animal, huge tracks, far greater than could have been made by any species we know. In later years, a few occasional reports concerning the Madidi monster would reach the West. Colonel Fawcett shot and killed and measured a 62-foot anaconda snake. The natives that were with him said, "Colonel, you should see the big ones." He said, "This is not a big one?" A couple of years ago, a 130-foot boa was reported in Reuters News Service in Peru. They said the snake went crashing through the jungle and left a trail wide enough through the trees that you could drive your wagon down it. Then the snake went back into the river. Another one floating down the Amazon was reported to be 150 feet long. Modern-day explorer Leonard Clark picked up stories of Indians seeing long-necked animals that browsed on the vegetation and attacked canoes that approached them. He stated, "Speaking of reptiles, old boy, Colonel Fawcett reached the eastern edge of Madre de Dios, out where you are going. It is a country of swamps apparently. One day while running his dugouts through it, he saw a great reptilian head rise out of the jungle, but before he could shoot, the head was lowered. From the noise the beast made getting away, he took it to be some sort of dinosaur. His Indians revolted and it was necessary to return to Mato Grosso." When I smiled, he presently added, "Don't be too sure they don't exist, we hear a great many stories from the Indians here." In 2005, Genesis Park staff mounted an exploratory trip up Amazon tributaries along the border of Brazil and Bolivia. Villagers and indigenous communities were contacted from the Rio Madre de Dios, up the Rio Beni and towards the Rio Madidi. Very little knowledge of any long-necked reptilian creature was uncovered, but what reports were received matched the information obtained about the Moklambembe from the expeditions into Africa. Also, a strange dinosaur-like image has been found adorning a Peruvian water bottle that dates from 200 AD. It is quite likely that some of the large sauropod dinosaur species, like Diplodocus and Apatosaurus, were merely variations of the same created kind. Similarly, despite the different names from Africa to South America, the general description of supposed living dinosaurs remains the same, about 30 feet in length with a long neck, snake-like head and long, flexible tail. Apparently these dinosaurs are similar in form to their counterparts in the fossil record. Indeed, the creation model would predict that they could not evolve into a different kind of animal. In fact, living fossils are often smaller, and arguably less fit, than their preserved ancestors, again conforming to the creation model. In Gabon, a group of African natives known as the Fang people tell of an animal called Nyamala, identifying it with a picture of Diplodocus. In 1913, Captain von Stein was sent by the German government to explore the Cameroon. Von Stein wrote of an animal sized between a hippopotamus and an elephant with a long, and very flexible neck, and a long muscular tail like that of an alligator. Von Stein was even shown a path said to have been made by this animal in order to get at its food. On p. 257 of his 1927 book Trader Horn. Horn writes, "I, and behind the Cameroons there's things living we know nothing about.
I could have made books about many things.
The Yego Nini they say is still in the swamps and rivers.
Giant diver it means. Comes out of the water and devours people. Old men will tell you what their grandfathers saw, but they still believe it's there. Same as the Amali I've always taken it to be. I've seen the Amali's footprint.
About the size of a good frying pan in circumference and three claws instead of five."
In the fall of 2000, an expedition led by Genesis Park staff pioneered research in southeastern Cameroon by slogging through nasty swamps, floating jungle rivers, trekking virgin rainforests, and interviewing pygmy forest peoples who had never before talked to an outside explorer. From village to village, informants recognized the creature from a lineup of various animals. The name was always the same, like Lobembe. Eyewitnesses led them to places where it had been seen, in some cases quite recently. Its actions were described in fascinating detail in harmony with Dr. Mackel's information from the Congo. A follow-up expedition was initiated by the BBC in 2001. The most recent trip, led by Canadian Brian Sass, discovered an island in the Ja River, which contained nesting caves like those identified by Mackel. They took casts of footprints and photographs of the caves and actually had a brief encounter with the elusive monster of Cameroon as it swam past their dugout canoe toward its lair. Such burrow digging activity on the part of dinosaurs was confirmed by fossils in 2008. A paleontologist from Montana State University stumbled upon a sandstone mass that was S-shaped and about 7 feet long. At the end of this feature were the bones of an adult dinosaur and two juveniles who apparently inhabited a burrow which filled with an influx of sand, trapping the inhabitants. This burrow, which is surrounded by rock derived from mud and clay, is strong evidence that digging and denning dinosaurs cared for their young. The scenario matches quite precisely the reports from Cameroon. The ceratopsians, or frilled dinosaurs, are members of a family of large, plant-eating dinosaurs that vary in size from the tiny protoceratops to the famous triceratops. They have a parrot-like beak at the front of the jaw and sport a wide diversity of horns and frills, from the chasmosaurus whose neck frill extended halfway down its back to the hornless pachyonosaurus. Paleontologists believe that their horns were utilized in combat while the neck frill appeared intimidating, perhaps protecting them from the large bipedal carnivores. The ceratopsians weighed several tons, as much as modern elephants, but their short feet and hind leg sprawl made them slower and not as tall. There are also some credible reports from Africa that these creatures persist even to the present. The same Likuala swamp region of the Congo, which is supposed to be home to the Moklumbembe, may also contain another dinosaurian, the Imala Ntuka, literally killer of elephants. This stout rhinoceros-like creature is reputed to have a penchant for killing elephants with its single horn. Lucien Blancou, chief game inspector in French Equatorial Africa in the 1950s, wrote of a ferocious creature, larger than a buffalo, that was considered the most dangerous animal by the Kel pygmies. The presence of a beast which sometimes disembowels elephants is also known, but it does not seem to be prevalent there now as in the preceding districts. A specimen was supposed to have been killed 20 years ago at Dongu, but on the left of the Ubangi and in the Belgian Congo. In 1981, Dr. Rory Mackel traveled to the Congo searching for the rumored sauropod dinosaur Moklumbembe. But he was surprised to hear reports of another mysterious animal called the Imala Ntuka, or killer of elephants. The natives in the northwest region of the Likuala swamp told how it would gore elephants with its single horn. Mackel's contemplation that it was a ceratopsian was cast in doubt by the pygmies not recollecting a neck frill. The description, however, does not fit a rhinoceros, which has a short tail and does not have a true horn composed of bone or ivory. It is fused keratin, hair, and it seldom becomes the winner in a confrontation with elephants. Mackel left open the possibility that the Imala Ntuka was a centrosaurus, pointed lizard. This member of the ceratopsian family, formerly the Monoclonius, sports a single large horn on the center of its head. The ceratopsian identification has been strengthened by similar reports with a neck frill obtained by Genesis Park staff during a recent expedition to Cameroon. It also matches the classical author's multiple references to a ferocious single-horned creature that spears elephants in the belly and leaves them to bleed to death. There are numerous reports of a strange, horned creature along the west coast of Central Africa. French zoologist Bernard Heuvelmans discusses some of them in his 1959 book On the Track of Unknown Animals under the category of water elephant and forest rhinoceros. In December 1919, the London Daily Mail published a letter from C.G. James, who had lived in what is now Zambia. He reported on an enormous beast with a single ivory horn living in the waters of Lake Bangweulu and the surrounding lakes and swamps. The same creature is also mentioned in both Millay 1924 book Far Away Up the Nile, and Hughes 1933 volume 18 Years on Lake Bangweulu. The latter describes Wa Ushi tribesmen actually killing such a creature along the Luapula River that leads to Lake Bangweulu. They detailed how its smooth body was armed with a single horn fixed like that of a rhinoceros, but composed of smooth, white, highly polished ivory. Hughes tells of a hippo that was said to be killed by one of these creatures. The throat was torn out. Indigenous peoples near Lake Edward in Zaire call this same creature a rizima and refer to it as a gigantic hippopotamus with the horns of a rhinoceros on its head. In Mali, the Bambara people sculpture iron figurines of a three-horned creature with long points coming off the neck, much like the ceratopsian dinosaur Chasmosaurus. In Cameroon, the Baka pygmies identify pictures of a triceratops with an animal they call the Nubu. They report it being as big as an ox, possessing a neck frill, and sporting from 1 to 4 horns. Apparently, the mature male has the largest frill. Perhaps this is the same species as the Amalan Tuka in the Congo, and the observers there merely saw the single-horned variety or younger creatures. The Nubu is said to inhabit the savannas along the Bumba and Songa River, where it is known to fight with elephants. The Geelong Advertiser, of Victoria, Australia, reported in July 1845 about the finding of unfossilized bone forming part of the knee joint of some gigantic animal. The paper reported showing it to an Aboriginal they regarded as particularly intelligent. He identified it immediately as a bunyip bone and unhesitatingly drew a picture of it. When the bone was shown to other Aboriginal people who had no opportunity of communicating with each other, they all instantly recognized the bone and the picture as being of a bunyip, a common word in some Aboriginal languages for a frightening monster. They gave detailed, consistent accounts of where a few people they knew had been killed by one of these. The creature was said to be amphibious, laid eggs, and from the descriptions, appeared to combine the characteristics of a bird and an alligator, i.e. a bipedal reptile. Note that no crocodiles or alligators are found in Australia except in its far north. Geelong is deep in the south. One of the Aboriginals, named Mumbauran, showed several deep wounds on his breast made by the claws of the animal. The description and sketch certainly fits well with some form of bipedal dinosaur. Extending from the Northern Territory's Arnhem Land east through the Gulf of Carpentaria to Queensland's Cape York district is the story of Burrinjor. The description is reminiscent of an Allosaurus, a smaller version of the well-known Tyrannosaurus. In 1950, cattlemen on the border between the Northern Territory and Queensland claimed losing stock to a strange beast, which left mutilated, half-eaten corpses in its destructive wake. A part Aboriginal tracker also claimed to have seen a bipedal reptile, 25 feet tall, moving through the scrub near Lagoon Creek on the Gulf Coast in 1961. Some parts of Northern Australia's vastness are still little explored, and large areas of it are closed to public access. Perhaps some creatures unknown to science are still to be found there. That this is possible was shown a few years back when a tree, the Wallamai pine, was found in a national park in New South Wales. Scientists said it was like finding a small dinosaur. The tree is known from its fossils in dinosaur age rock, but these are not found in any of the layers in between. Unlike an animal, a tree cannot run away and hide, yet this tree was completely unknown to science till recently. Some parts of Australia have traditions of huge reptiles suggestive of long-necked sauropods, the dinosaur group which includes Diplodocus and Apatosaurus. For instance, Central Australian tribes describe Culta as a giant serpent who lived in the swamps which once covered the region and ate plants. He was said to have a small head at the end of a long, narrow neck, a massive, bulky body supported by 4 huge legs, and a long, pointed tail, which trailed behind him. This is similar to the accounts of Wanambi from Northern Australia, who features in Aboriginal cave paintings, and Kulin and Mindy from Victoria. Unfortunately, the Aborigines maintain, the land eventually all dried up, the forests became desert, the swamps emptied, and Culta died. This actually fits the most common creationist models of the changing climate after Noah's flood. Since most of the water for the flood came up from under the ground, Genesis 7:11 and 8:2, the post-flood oceans would have been warmer than today. This would have generated extra moisture in the atmosphere for centuries afterwards, providing ideal conditions for an ice age. This same increase in moisture would have meant that there was much more rainfall for centuries after the flood in regions not affected by ice. Eventually, the rainfall patterns would have normalized once all the excess oceanic heat had come into balance with the air temperature. This is consistent with the universally held view that Australia's now arid heart was once a lushly forested, humid environment. Thus Australia's dinosaurs, at least, may have died out largely as a result of the environmental changes as vast areas of the inland relentlessly dried up. Strange creatures described as dinosaur-like and standing 2 meters, 6 feet, 6 inches, tall have been seen in recent weeks in Pampa Aceh, a small town 17 kilometers, 10 miles, from the city of Arica in northern Chile. The two strange creatures, described as small dinosaurs, were reported by the occupants of a Toronto pickup truck between Iquique and Arica on Thursday night, July 30, 2004. The vehicle's driver, Dario Riquelme, was traveling in the company of Chilean Army official Hernan Cuevas, his wife and 2 young children. According to his account, the situation, which left the family rather nervous and confused at 9:30 p.m. that evening, the event took place in the Pampa Aceh sector, only a few moments before passing the Barrio Presencias Tutelares, 17 kilometers south of Arica. Riquelme and his party left Iquique, just south of Chile's border with Peru at 6 p.m., were only a few minutes away from Arica and were holding a normal conversation when something strange darted in front of the vehicle. "My companion said, 'Look at that tremendous beast.' And I managed to hit the brakes. Then, after a few minutes, the second one ambled past, and it was even more startling because it was just like a dinosaur, walking on 2 legs. It had very noticeable thighs," Riquelme said. According to the driver's description, the figures were gray and hairless. The second one, which crossed a few minutes later, was clearly seen by Riquelme, Hernan Cuevas and his 12-year-old daughter, Tanya. They estimated the creature's height at 2 meters, 6 feet, 6 inches, thanks to the fact that the beast's distance from the vehicle at the moment it crossed was not more than 4 meters, 13 feet. In the case of the second animal, they said it was smaller but were able to see it clearly because it was a clear night and there was moonlight. However, what was most remarkable about both creatures was the speed at which they crossed the road and the strides they took. Riquelme and Cuevas had gone to Arica to purchase a vehicle, but the strange event caused nervousness among Senior Cuevas's wife and daughter. "The good thing is that when they started screaming, my companion and I didn't lose control and kept calm. Later we stopped to smoke a cigarette and walked around. From there I descended, drove J.T. calmly to Arica, but I'm still nervous," explains the driver, who contacted the Chilean newspaper, La Estrella, The Star, immediately after reaching the city. Riquelme's account coincides with that of Hernan Cuevas, who is a recruiting officer with the army. "When the first crossing occurred, I asked Dario if he had seen it, and he said yes. Then we started making comments as to what it might have been. Shortly after, another one walked by, shorter, but very similar to a dinosaur or a lizard running on 2 legs. Even my eldest daughter saw it and let out a scream," Cuevas said. 12-year-old Tanya stated that the creatures were very similar to a dinosaur and had small hands. "Oh, but God's graciousness doesn't even stop there for ye of little faith. We not only find water dinosaurs and land dinosaurs, but the third type of dinosaur people still see with their own eyes are flying dinosaurs. Let's take a look at some of these high-flying eyewitness accounts." The Illustrated London News of February 9, 1856, p. 166, reported that workmen digging a railway tunnel in France last century disturbed a huge winged creature at Calmont, in Haute-Marne, while blasting rock for the tunnel. The creature was described as livid black, with a long neck and sharp teeth. It looked like a bat, and its skin was thick and oily. It died soon after. Its wingspan was measured at 3.22 meters, 10 feet 7 inches. A naturalist immediately recognized it as belonging to the genus Pterodactylus annus, and it matched the remains of known pterodactyl fossils. "There could be a few pterodactyls still alive in Africa. They call it the Congomedo." An African explorer named Mellon kept hearing reports about this creature named Congomedo, who is supposed to live in the swamps near Rhodesia in the Belgian Congo. The natives told him it was a bird. But not exactly a bird, more like a lizard with wings of skin like a bat's. When he showed them pictures of a pterodactyl and other animals, all immediately pointed for the pterodactyl, excitedly muttering Congomedo. "Deep in the bush of East Central Africa, lives a beaked, flying creature called the Congomedo. This fascinating animal first received widespread attention when explorer Frank Welland described it in his 1932 book In Which Bound Africa. The Congamado, overwhelmer of boats, is described as a large, reddish creature with leathery wings, devoid of feathers. Eyewitnesses who are shown an illustration of the pterodactyl unanimously agreed to this identification of the Congamado. The evidence for the pterodactyl is that the natives can describe it so accurately, unprompted, and that they all agree about it. There is negative support also in the fact that they said they could not identify any other of the prehistoric monsters which I showed them. The natives do not consider it to be an unnatural thing like a mulum, demon, only a very awful thing, like a man-eating lion, or a rogue elephant, but infinitely worse. I have mentioned the Jindu Swamp, northwestern Zambia, as one of the reputed haunts of the Congamado, and I must say that the place itself is the very kind of place in which such a reptile might exist, if it is possible anywhere. The Konde people of the northwestern province of Zambia used to carry charms called Muchiwa Congamado to protect them at certain river crossings from the Congamado. The creature was described by the Konde of old as a huge red lizard with membranous wings like a bat spreading 5 or more feet, and with teeth in its huge beak. In the 1920s, Hedman Kanyinga from the Jiwindu Swamp area near the Zairean border instantly identified as Congamado a picture of a pterodactyl. Nevertheless, as recently as 1958, the science journalist Maurice Burton wrote in the Illustrated London News in 1958 that there had been several reports from Africa of a pterodactyl-like creature, with speculation that the Bangweulu swamps might be one of its habitats. He pointed out that off the coast of Africa, the coelacanth, a deep-sea contemporary of the pterodactyl, had been caught by fishermen.
Though dragons have completely dropped out of all modern works on natural history, they were still retained and regarded as quite orthodox until a little before the time of Cuvier. For instance, P. Gaffetta, in a report of the Kingdom of Congo, the Harleian Collections of Travels, Volume 2, 1745, p. 457, gathered out of the discourses of Mr. E. Lopes, a Portuguese, speaking of the province of Bemba, which he defines as on the sea coast from the River Ambrise, until the River Coanza towards the south, says of serpents, there are also certain other creatures which, being as big as rams, have wings like dragons, with long tails, and long chaps, and divers rows of teeth, and feed upon raw flesh.
Their color is blue and green, their skin painted like scales, and they have 2 feet but no more. The pagans used to worship them as gods, and to this day you may see divers of them that are kept for a marvel. And because they are very rare, the chief lords there curiously preserve them, and suffer the people to worship them, which tendeth greatly to their profits by reason of the gifts and oblations which the people offer unto them.
And John Barbet, agent general of the Royal Company of Africa, in his description of the coasts of South Guinea, Churchill, Collections of Voyages, 1746, p. 213, says, some blacks assuring me that there are winged serpents or dragons having a forked tail and a prodigious wide mouth, full of sharp teeth, extremely mischievous to mankind, and more particularly to small children.
Dr. J.L.B. Smith, famous for his investigation into the living fossil, the coelacanth, wrote in his 1956 book Old Four Legs about flying dragons that lived near Mount Kilimanjaro, Tanzania. One man had actually seen such a creature in flight close by at night. I did not and do not dispute at least the possibility that some such creature may still exist.
Smith, J.L.B., Old Four Legs, 1956. Pages 108-109. Indeed, a game warden named A. Blaney Percival stationed in Kenya noted that a huge creature whose tracks only revealed 2 feet and a heavy tail was believed by the Kitui Wakamba natives to fly down to the ground from Mount Kenya every night. Schuker, Carl, In Search of Prehistoric Survivors, 1995, p. 49.
In Kenya the creature is called Batanzinga.
A very credible account was described in 1956 by engineer J.P.F. Brown near Lake Bangweulu, Zambia, and reported in April 2, 1957 Rhodesia Herald. Brown was driving back to Salisbury from a visit to Kasenga in Zaire. He stopped at a location called Fort Rosebery, just to the west of Lake Bangweulu, to get his canteen from the trunk. It was about 6 p.m., when he saw two creatures flying slowly and silently directly overhead. He observed that they looked prehistoric, with a long tail and narrow head. He estimated a wingspan of about 3 to 3.5 feet. One of them opened its mouth, in which he saw a large number of pointed teeth. Further reports of such odd flying creatures come from the Awemba tribe that claims they live in caves in cliffs near the source of the Great Zambezi River. In 1957, at a hospital at Fort Rosebery, the same location J. P. F. Brown had reported seeing strange flying creatures the year before, a patient came in with a severe wound in his chest. The doctor asked him what had happened, and the native claimed that a great bird had attacked him in the Bangwulu swamps. When asked to sketch the bird, the native drew a picture of a creature that resembled a pterosaur. To the west in Cameroon, the natives describe a nocturnal, bat-like creature called Olator. Likely the same as the Kongamato, this creature was observed by an exploration team under Ivan Sanderson in 1932. Modern reports of the Kongamato continue to surface. In 1998, Steve Ramandi Menya, a Kenyan exchange student living in Louisiana, declared that the Kongamato is still known to the bush-dwelling people in his country. The creatures are said to feed on decomposing human flesh, digging up bodies if they are not buried to sufficient depth. In 1942, Captain Charles R.S. Pittman wrote a nearly 300-page volume describing the fauna of Uganda and the surrounding regions in great detail. He records the natives' superstitious fear of looking upon the wailing tree hyrax at night lest they die, even though they were not afraid to capture the animal in daylight. He then discusses another animal that the natives described. When in northern Rhodesia, I heard of a mythical beast, alleged to have a similar death-dealing attribute, which intrigued me considerably. It was said to haunt formerly, and perhaps still to haunt, the dense, swampy forest region in the neighborhood of the Angola and Congo borders. To look upon it too is death. But the most amazing feature of this mystery beast is its suggested identity, with a creature, bat and bird-like in form on a gigantic scale strangely reminiscent of the prehistoric pterodactyl. From where does the primitive African derive such a fanciful idea? Shortly after World War II, as Western missionaries began to penetrate the deep jungles and remote islands of Papua New Guinea, stories of a flying creature, called the Ropan, demon flyer, began to be reported. Dwayne Hodgkinson was stationed northwest of Ley, near Finshaven, PNG, as part of the Army Cavalry in 1944. About noon one day in August, he was walking down a trail through a clearing in the forest when he was startled by a crashing in the brush. As he watched, a large bird-like creature ponderously rose from the ground, circled and flew away. Hodgkinson, a pilot, estimated the wingspan to be about 20 feet. He clearly recalls the dark gray coloration, long serpentine neck, beak, and distinctive head crest. Described as a nocturnal creature, the Ropan possesses two leathery wings like a bat, a long tail with a flange on the end, a beak filled with teeth, and razor-sharp claws. An intriguing sea chart, dated 1595, warns mariners to beware of a variety of sea monsters. It depicts two flying creatures with long necks, head crests, ribbed wings and fantastical tails, split on the end like a flipper, flying above the islands of New Guinea. One is even shown as having dermal bumps. Two species appear to persist in Papua New Guinea. A smaller pterosaur is believed to inhabit the caves that dot the islands of Rambunzo in the Bismarck Archipelago. Reports seem to fit the presumed extinct Ramphohinchus, a pterosaur with a wingspan of 3 to 4 feet. Like the Kongamato in Kenya, the Ropan is said to have a taste for decaying human flesh and has even harassed native funeral gatherings with Western missionaries present. Carl E. Barf of the Creation Evidence Museum conducted an expedition to Manus. With missionary Jim Bloom, he observed one of the creatures through a monocular night scope and snapped a picture of a strange print in the sand the next morning. In 1987, Tyson Hughes, an English missionary, began an 18-month contract to assist the Moluccan tribes people of Seram Island, Indonesia, to develop efficient farms. Tyson heard stories about a terrifying creature called the Orangbati, men with wings, that possesses enormous leathery wings like a bat, and lives in the caves of Mount Kairatu,
an extinct volcano situated in the center of the island. Likely this creature is similar to the Ropan from adjoining Papua New Guinea. In October of 2004, Genesis Park staff conducted a three-week trip to the remote Siasai Island off the western coast of Papua New Guinea, somewhat south of the Manus Island group. The goal was to hike into the mountainous interior of Siasai to follow up on intriguing reports received from coastal communities on the south of the island. Dozens of interviews were conducted, and the credibility of witnesses was carefully tested by the use of black and white profiles. After carefully collating the dozens of interviews, a composite drawing of most likely characteristics possessed by the Ropan was assembled. The creature appears to resemble the Dimorphodon pterosaur, with the addition of a head crest and dermal bumps. However, the animal is said to have a 15 to 20 feet wingspan and exhibits a bioluminescent glow. On Wednesday, October 27, a large, yellowish glow approximately 20 to 25% the size of the full moon was observed to fly behind one of the volcanic peaks. The light left no trail, and it twinkled around the edges. The whole sighting lasted for only a few seconds, as the light streaked across the horizon and behind Mount Tulu. Intriguing carvings made by an unknown artisan were photographed. The statues shows a medicine man with a reptilian creature on his shoulders. The creatures display a lizard-like ear, forked tongue, elongated snake-like neck, shallow beak, scaly membrane wings, dermal bumps running down its back, webbed feet, and a long tail, in one case being swallowed by a crocodilian. In the fall of 2006, a follow-up expedition obtained the first photograph of a Ropan light as multiple creatures were observed flying nocturnally. The similarities in the several independent lines of evidence produce a powerful argument for a living pterosaur in Papua New Guinea. The remarkable similarity in ancient and modern fiery flying serpent reports supports the plain interpretation of Genesis that men and pterosaurs have always coexisted. The reports of the bright appearance of pterosaurs from Isaiah to the Egyptian hymn of the Saraph to the account from the Middle Ages to the reports of the Ropan are uncanny. It is very exciting to think that one of these magnificent creatures still survives. A missionary from Venezuela named Adam Hutchinson shared this in November of 1998. He said, "The natives in our area keep talking about this animal that they are scared to death of. A big flying animal. They killed one of them about 30 years ago. It was said to capsize canoes and even carry off Indians. The Indians, terrified of this great, but had sent their bravest men to the head of the river where they killed the creature about 30 years ago and buried it near the Muwada River." Muwada means bat dung in their language. When Clint, another missionary, showed the Indians a picture of a pterodactyl there as got as big as saucers, and they said, "That is the bat." They positively identified this extinct dinosaur as the bat that lived just a few miles from their village. Even today, the Indians will not fish or drink from the river for fear of this creature. In the Midwest, the Illini Indians of Illinois were once terrorized by a creature they called piasa, which means bird that devours man. The piasa was so large that it could allegedly carry off a full-grown deer. When it finally acquired a taste for human flesh, no Indian was safe. The Illini, as well as other Indian tribes in the area, greatly feared the piasa and sought to destroy it. One day the Illini were said to have tricked the piasa by hiding 20 armed warriors in a designated spot, while the chief chose to stand in open view as a victim for the piasa. When the bird was about to pounce upon the chief, the warriors leapt out and speared it to death. John Russell was a writer from Illinois who had a great interest in the piasa. In 1848, Mr. Russell explored the caves where this creature was said to live. One cave that was extremely difficult to access yielded evidence for the Illini story. Russell stated, "The shape of the cave was irregular, but so far as I could judge, the bottom would average 20 by 30 feet. The floor of the cave throughout its whole extent was one mass of human bones." So, what kind of creature was the piasa?
High upon a cliff in Alton, Illinois, the Indians made a painting of the piazza. The painting was destroyed in the 1850s when the face of the cliff collapsed into the river. However, many explorers during the 17th and 18th centuries saw the painting and described it in great detail in their journals. These explorers describe a bird-like creature with many reptilian characteristics. While exploring the Sonora Desert on the 12th of February 1699, Captain Juan Mateo Manje, accompanied by Jesuits Eusebio Francisco Quino and Adamo Gill, was told by the Pima Indians that a giant monster lived in a nearby cave in days past. It was a menace to the Pima, because it would fly around and catch as many Indians as it could eat. One day, after the creature had eaten its fill, some Indians followed it back to its cave. When it was sound asleep, they closed the entrance of the cave with wood collected for this occasion, then set it on fire. The creature couldn't escape and, growling fiercely, died as it was asphyxiated by the flames and smoke. The Pima recalled another story of killing a similar creature in the Pueblo of Opasura by using the same strategy. We are told the bones of this creature were found during the pacification of Mexico by General Don Hernando Cortes and were sent to Spain. Stories of giant man-eating birds are common among many other Indian tribes of the American Southwest. The Yaqui Indians spoke of a giant bird that lived on the hill of Otan Kawi. Every morning it would fly out to capture its human prey. After many deaths, a young boy who lost his family to this bird killed the creature with a bow and arrows. In Utah's San Rafael Swell, there is other suggestive evidence for man's coexistence with pterosaurs. In the Black Dragon Canyon, there is a beautiful pictograph of a pterosaur. The Indians of the Swell apparently saw a bird-like creature with enormous wings, a tail, a long neck and beak, and a vertical head crest, which some flying reptiles sported. One creature in Indian mythology that has long puzzled anthropologists is the Thunderbird. Stories of thunderbirds are widespread, extending from Alaska all the way down to South America. Indians attributed thunder and lightning to these birds. The thunder resulted from the flapping of their wings, while bolts of lightning proceeded from their mouths. The impressive size of the thunderbirds meant that during midday flight, they would cast strikingly large shadows upon the ground. The thunderbird's description, albeit distorted by time and retelling, so much fits that of pterosaurs that even some evolutionists have conceded on that point. The Thunderbird appears in many Indian tales and Indian artwork. Its description is very much like one of the prehistoric flying reptiles that flapped its way through the skies in the days of the dinosaurs. The Sioux Indians tell a story about an experience some of their warriors had with a Thunderbird that perfectly fits the description of the Pteranodon. One day, long, long ago, before the white man came to America, a party of Sioux Indian warriors were out hunting. They had left their village far behind. Before they realized it, the group of braves found themselves alone in the bare and rocky badlands of the West. Suddenly the sky darkened. There was a clap of thunder that shook the earth. Looking up in terror, the Indians thought they saw the shape of a giant bird falling to earth. The band of hunters traveled over the badlands for days until they came at last to the spot where they thought the giant bird had fallen. Nothing was left of the terrible creature but its bones. The Indians shuddered as they looked at the monster skeleton. The bird had fallen so hard, they thought, that its bones were partly sunk in the rock. But the braves could see that its wingspread was as big as four tall men standing on top of one another. The strange creature had fierce claws on its wings, as well as on its feet, and the beak was long and sharp. There was a long, bony crest on its head. The Indians knew that they had never seen a bird like it before. The legend of the Thunderbird existed all over, up and down the west coast of America. Indian prayer sticks show the head of a pterodactyl. Henry Ford put an eagle on the taillight of his Thunderbird. It should have been a pterodactyl, Henry.
There is similar evidence suggesting possible coexistence with pterosaurs among the Indians of Mexico and South America, too. José Díaz Bolio, a Mexican archaeologist, discovered an ancient Mayan relief sculpture in Veracruz, Mexico, of a bird with some features of the pteranodon. The November 1968 edition of Science Digest published an article on this evolutionary oddity, called Serpent Bird of the Mayans. The serpent bird, says Bolio, is not merely the product of Mayan flights of fancy, but a realistic representation of an animal that lived during the period of the ancient Mayans 1,000 to 5,000 years ago. In recent years, missionaries have come out of South America's interior with stories from Indians of the birds that are also suggestive of pterosaurs. In southern Venezuela, about 150 kilometers, 100 miles from the Brazilian border, the Yekwana have a story of a giant man-eating bat. This story has been with them for several centuries. Clint Vernoy, a missionary to these Indians, told me the following: the legend is told that a few generations ago there was a large bat that lived at the headwaters of the river in a cave on a large mountain. Periodically it would attack canoes and carry off people as its prey. After quite a few deaths, men were chosen to go to the animal's lair and kill it, which they did. I asked them which mountain it was, but there is no consensus, even though I would love to know where that was. Because it was seen to defecate in the river after carrying off humans, the Indians would not drink from the Erebato River. They will cross a river 100 yards wide just to get to a small stream that feeds into the river for their drinking water. We showed the Indians pictures of pterodactyls and such, and they said, yes, that had to be the giant bat. For them it is not a myth or legend, but a true story of their past that has been handed down through the years. The Indians of the Correntin, according to missionary W.H. Brett, also tell of an enormous gliding serpent. A giant winged creature, like something out of Jurassic Park, has reportedly been sighted several times in southwest Alaska in recent weeks. Villagers in Togiak and Manakotak say they have seen a huge bird that's much bigger than anything they have seen before. A pilot says he spotted the creature while flying passengers to Manakotak last week. He calculated that its wingspan matched the length of a wing on his Cessna 207. That's about 14 feet. Other people have put the wingspan in a similar range. Scientists aren't sure what to make of the reports. No one doubts that people in the region west of Dillingham have seen a very large raptor-like bird. But biologists and other people familiar with big Alaska birds say they're skeptical it's that big. A recent sighting of the mystery bird occurred October 10 when Moses Kupchiak, a 43-year-old heavy equipment operator from Togiak, 40 miles west of Manakotak, saw the bird flying toward him from about 2 miles away as he worked his tractor. At first I thought it was one of those old-time otter planes, Kupchiak said. Instead of continuing toward me, it banked to the left, and that's when I noticed it wasn't a plane. The bird was a something huge, he said. The wing looks a little wider than the otter's, maybe as long as the otter plane. The bird flew behind a hill and disappeared. Kupchiak got on the radio and warned people in Togiak to tell their children to stay away. Pilot John Bowker said he was highly skeptical of reports of this great big eagle that is 2 or 3 times the size of a bald eagle. I didn't put any thought into it. But early this week while flying into Manakotak, Bowker, owner of Bristol Bay Air Service, looked out his left window, and 1,000 feet away, there's this big bird, he said. The people in the plane all saw him, Bowker said. He's huge, he's really, really big. You wouldn't want to have your children out. Nikolai Alakayak, a freight and passenger driver from Manakotak who was flying with Bowker, said the creature looked like an eagle and was as large as the little super cub. Comparison to an eagle, certainly. Super cub? Probably not, scientists said. I'm certainly not aware of anything with a 14-foot wingspan that's been alive for the last 100,000 years. May 1961, New York State, the businessman flying his private plane over the Hudson River Valley claimed that he was buzzed by a large flying creature that he said looked more like a pterodactyl out of the prehistoric ages. Early 1960s, California, a couple driving through Trinity National Forest reported seeing the silhouette of a giant bird that they estimated to have a wingspan of 14 feet. They later described it as resembling a pterodactyl. February 1976, San Antonio, Texas. The three elementary school teachers saw what they described as a pterodactyl swooping low over their cars as they drove. They said its wingspan was between 15 and 20 feet. One of the teachers commented that it glided through the air on huge, bony wings like a bat's. September 1982, Los Fresnos, Texas. An ambulance driver named James Thompson was stopped while driving on Highway 100 by his sighting of a large bird-like object flying low over the area. He described it as black or grayish with a rough texture, but no feathers. It had a 5 to 6 foot wingspan, a hump on the back of its head, and almost no neck at all. After consulting some books to identify the creature, he decided it most looked like a pterosaur. Can all these sightings and stories be easily written off as a coincidentally having a pterosaur-like common thread? It seems easier to believe that the evolutionary long-age notion that these reptiles became extinct 65 million years ago is flawed. People have indeed encountered some of the terrifyingly large bird-like creatures we know today from the fossil record.
Now folks, once again, please keep in mind that this is not an exhaustive account of all the eyewitness reports of people seeing flying dinosaurs still alive. As with the water and land dinosaur accounts, this is just the tip of the iceberg. But I think by now you're getting the point. If anything needs to go extinct, it's not dinosaurs, it's evolution's version of dinosaurs. The evidence is clear. Dinosaurs do still live today, just like the Bible states. Shocker. And so here's the point. I'd say it's not only pretty clear that dinosaurs do still live today, but I'd also say somebody's doing a masterful job of trying to cover the whole thing up, you know what I'm saying. And gee whiz, I wonder why? Could it be that people would not only find out that dinosaurs came from the actual hand of God, but they would see they were also used to teach us to have a healthy fear of God, so we would get right with Him before it was too late? You know folks, if I didn't know better, I'd say somebody's trying to keep people from the truth, you know what I'm saying? Gee, I wonder who that might be? People please, don't miss the real purpose of dinosaurs. They weren't just big and fearful and came from the hand of God, they exist to teach us to have a healthy fear of God. Why? Because one day people, you're going to stand before God and you're going to be judged by God, and He alone has the power to take you to heaven or throw you straight into hell. Hello. That's something to be fearful of. But that's right, if you don't want to take my word for it, then please, I beg you, listen to God's.
1 Peter 2:17. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the brotherhood of believers, fear God, honor the king.
Oh people, how sad it is that we teach our kids to respect others and love others and even honor those in authority over us. But we never get around to teaching them to fear God. Could this be why our world is in the shape it's in? I think so. But more importantly, what's it going to take for you to stop being arrogant towards God and instead humble yourself before God and get saved through Jesus Christ, before it's too late? As you saw in this study, God is being gracious to us. He's given us the clear evidence that dinosaurs do still live today to show us that we can not only trust the Word of God, but that we need to have a healthy fear of God. Why? Because one day people, when you least expect it, your life is going to be over. It's just one heartbeat away. And when that happens, you're going to be standing before Almighty God. And the Bible is clear. If on earth you had repented of your sins and asked Jesus Christ to forgive you, then you will go straight into heaven. But if you did not repent of your sins and you arrogantly mocked Him, you will go straight into hell. And so I beg you, please, please, won't you turn from your wicked ways? Won't you get right with God? Won't you escape the eternal judgment to come? People, please, this is not a game. All eternity is on the line and time is running out. Your death is going to be here before you know it, but by then it'll be too late. Please, cry out to God now. Humble yourself and ask Jesus to forgive you of your sins before it's too late.